think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind, or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 271 of Low Limit Football on this 3rd of February, 2020. Tonight, the third generation of Maldini takes the pitch for AC Milan as Daniel Maldini makes his debut for the Serie A this past weekend. Erling Haaland adds to his goal-scoring total as Dortmund continues their hard charge to the top of the Bundesliga, now led by Bayern Munich. Neymar looks to be out for a couple of weeks with an intercostal injury, but not before some controversy against Montpellier on the weekend. And tonight, we are joined by a man who has won the World Cup Golden Shoe, the World Cup Bronze Ball, was named to the world's greatest players of the 20th century, and won the 1994 Ballon d'Or. Risto Stoichkov joins us in just a little bit. But first, let me get my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. One question for you, my friend. Do your hips lie?
Of course they don't. Of course. and if that's not the case, go ask Jenny from the block. I think that'll help you.
Oh, man. Did you ever think there would be so much controversy over the Super Bowl halftime show? Or so many like varying opinions from, A, it was great, it was fantastic, to B, the Janet Jackson malfunction wasn't as bad. I mean, I've heard it all. I've seen it all today. It's funny because, to be honest with you, a lot of the reactions have run across political lines. And I think that goes back to where J-Lo takes off that jacket that looked like the American flag on one side, but it was the Puerto Rican flag on the other side. Mm-hmm. A lot was made of Shakira, what he did with her tongue, which was apparently something of an Arabic thing, going back to her Arabic heritage. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of mixed reaction in the interwebs, I would say, don't you think?
Yeah, but I think everyone's entitled to an opinion. I think in the end, you know, it's a performance. It's, what, 15 minutes long. Mm-hmm. You know, it only happens once a year. You can provide whatever opinion you want, but in the end, you know, they're there to entertain.
Right.
And are we entertained? Yes. You and I are both entertained. And mm-hmm. That's it. We move on. I mean, some mm-hmm. people just don't like it because of taste of music. That's fine. But the NFL wants to sell money and be able to get eyeballs for people to talk, and they definitely succeeded in that part.
Yeah. I mean, for the record, for me, the national anthem was excellent. Demi Lovato.
Ah, Demi did well, yeah.
The football game itself was excellent right down to the last minute. Fantastic watch. I thought the halftime show was excellent. Very entertaining. You know, there was a lot to it. My family enjoyed watching it. So for the record, for me, last night, which is rare, but last night, the Super Bowl was a home run. And I know we're starting out with the American football here, but it was a home run for me.
And I think it was needed after what happened last week, yeah. And all the tragedy and all the somber feeling towards the death of Kobe Bryant. We were thankful, except at least if you're a San Francisco fan, to have been able to been entertained in all aspects yesterday in Miami.
Definitely, no doubt about it. So let's jump into the show proper here. Let's get going. I mean, we have an incredible guest tonight. I know we've hyped it up a little bit, and let's be honest, it is well worth the hype. So the interview we did with Risto Stoichkov was
phenomenal, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was a huge honor and a pleasure. So I want to get to that as soon as possible. So let's jump into the show proper, Rob. And to do that, my friend, you are the one with trivia tonight, so it's your honor.
Yes, it is. So during the weekend, we're going to head to the Premier League. You know, the Farmer League, as some would call it. Yeah, probably. I have an interesting one for you.
Okay.
It's going to be based on your geography skills. Are you good at geography?
Not my English geography. Not much, but it's not terrible.
No, it's world geography. World,
yeah, I'm reasonable, I would say.
Right. So during the weekend, and I apologize for butchering his name, Abawana Samata scored for Aston Villa and he's from the country of Tanzania.
Okay.
Meaning that it is the latest country to have scored in the Premier League. So like what I'm trying to say is
most recent
country to have scored in the Premier League. Can you name the total amount of players from different countries to have scored goals in the Premier League?
Wow. So you want a number of countries that have scored in the Premier League.
This number of different countries.
Okay.
Tanzania was the latest one. Can you give me the number of total countries? Okay. And I believe it's what, 207 sovereign states or something?
Correct.
Right. So
I believe that's the right number.
Good luck. Good luck.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll put a number on it. We'll slap a number on it at the end of the show and we'll see how close we got. So, but that's a great question. That is a great question. So let's jump into it. And, you know, Rob, it's amazing, you know, on the side here, we haven't talked about transfer window too much, but we've talked about Erling Haaland quite a bit. We talked about Zlatan Ibrahimovic. We've had a run right now of derbies, right? We started with the Rome Derby 2 weeks ago with Roma-Lazio. This week's topic or opening thoughts topic is our reaction to the Madrid Derby, which is Atletico Madrid-Real Madrid next week, which we're going to highlight later on in the show, the Milan Derby. So these city derbies are coming fast and furious one after another, and they're wonderful to watch because they're massive rivalries. They're naturally built. Even when we get into the United States here with MLS, with everyone talks about El Tráfico, even though that's only been played a couple of times, it's already considered a derby or a rivalry, right? So, but let's focus on the rivalry at hand with La Liga's front runners right now in Real Madrid with a 1-0 victory over Atleti in the Madrid derby on the weekend. Karim Benzema on the 56th minute scores the lone goal. And really credit to, many would say credit to Zinedine Zidane for making a tactical change at the start of the half to kind of wind things up. For me, the first half, you know, from what I saw, Atleti was the better team of the two. A little more feisty, had better chances, seemed to have more possession of the ball. But then obviously with the structural change that Zidane makes or the tactical change that he makes, Madrid were the much better second half team, scored the goal early in the second half, were able to manage it and nurse it all the way across the finish line. And it speaks to a couple of things. One, to the quality right now that Real Madrid are showing, top of La Liga. They're really starting to wind it up and play extremely well, play like the La Liga team that we all know, which is scary for, you know, Champions League sides, you know, moving into, I believe if I remember correctly, they have Manchester City in the Champions League coming up. A Manchester City side that would certainly feel optimistic about winning the entire thing, although you wouldn't see that on the weekend. But currently, Real Madrid only lost one match so far in the league, 49 points, 3 points ahead of Barcelona. They have a matchup against City in the Champions League. They're really moving in the right direction. On the flip side, Atletico Madrid, losers of two of their last three in La Liga, they're currently sitting on 36 points. They're currently out of the European. They're out of the Champions League spots, even though they're moving forward in the Champions League proper. Not finding goals, and I think we talked about this last week or the week before, Rob. They've only scored 22 goals in 22 matches. This is not the sign of a team that's going to be able to compete for the top of any league when you're only averaging one goal a game. So it's really a tale of two sides of the city where you've got Real Madrid really pointing in that up direction and Atleti, you know, pointing in that down direction. And it was kind of shown in this match. What were your thoughts on the matchup in general and how these two teams are progressing?
Well, I think it's a sign of two different tales. You know, you have a Real Madrid side who, if you remember, Joe, started off very slowly in the league. There was that doubt, if you remember, of how the team was going to fare out against the teams like Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, whereas it's been a complete 180, you would say. Real Madrid had certainly been a firm have put their firm stamp into how dominant they've been so far in the league. You know, teams such as Barcelona, Atletico also dropping points. You have teams like Getafe, Valencia, Sevilla, who, you know, obviously didn't win over the weekend, but they're catching up. And even though that gap is still big, I think it's like first and third is a gap of 10 points. You know, they're really sticking their race into that. They're sticking their nose into that race. They definitely are looking very well in momentum. I mean, they haven't lost since, I believe, October in all competitions. So that's an incredible run for a team that is heading into their next, obviously, a couple more league games. They got a Copa del Rey match this week. And then you have the Champions League, the first leg against Manchester City, on top of a El Clasico beginning in March. So they're really finding that momentum. They really look as a well, you know, balanced team. You know, they're starting to look really dominant under Zidane, who obviously, you know, has the history there and knows how to handle such players like that. So in that type of perspective, it's gone well. But for Atletico, it's a different case. I think it's for them, it's a case of just, you know, it's not gone right at this moment. I mean, you know, they haven't been able to score goals, like you said. I think they have the same amount of goals as Mallorca, a team that's just above the relegation zone. So for them to, and they haven't won a game, I think, since the Super Cup. And then before that, it was a game. Yeah, they haven't won in almost a month now. So it's really been a test of how Atletico, who obviously are always contenders to go for the Champions League spots, let alone the league itself, you know, are finding really, really down on the perspective of even qualifying for the Champions League. You know, they're currently in sixth place on that last spot for the Europa League. You know, got Villarreal really edging up there with, below 2 points alongside Sociedad. So, yeah, they definitely need something. I mean, obviously the injury of João Félix obviously isn't performing to the standards that we thought he would have gone to. Isn't going well. You know, you're only getting, I believe, with Morata, 7 goals and then the rest, only a spell of goals. So it's not looked very well for Diego Simeone's men. I mean, in the end, coming into now, and of course you have that big game against Liverpool in the Champions League, heading into that game. I mean, you would say they're big underdogs, but if they really want to contend in that Champions League, then they really need to find that momentum quickly in the next two games. Even though, I guess that game against Liverpool, you know, when we thought about it at the start, you know, it would be such an interesting game, two high counterattacking teams. With what Jurgen Klopp is able to offer at Liverpool versus what Cholo Simeone offers at Atletico Madrid. Now, and looking at the dominance that Liverpool are continuing to have week by week, you know, this is going to really become a foregone conclusion, I think, for Liverpool if Atletico don't really get it on the right track in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you hinted to it, Atleti, their last time they won 2-1 against Leganes on January 4th in league. They're going to be leading into that Liverpool match up on the 18th with a match against Granada, who is right now mid-table. So certainly, you know, a challenge for any team. But this team lacks confidence right now. You know, you could see it on the pitch. I mean, they did come out well to start the first half, but they once the tide was turned, once things changed tactically, the team, you could see them lose confidence. And I think this is an issue right now. This is the main issue that, for me, Simeone has to solve. You know, it didn't help that the Madrid faithful were, or the Real Madrid faithful were mocking him, saying, you know, Cholo, don't leave, Cholo, stay. In the 90th minute, you know, kind of mocking him, saying, oh, you know, we beat you, so, you know, you should stay a little longer. But this is kind of where it has to go. I mean, and they're still a solidly defensive team, you know, only conceded 15 goals so far in the league. So they're capable, you know, of providing that masterclass and holding off a Liverpool. I mean, I know everyone wants to make a big deal about what Liverpool's doing in the Premier League, but you know, Liverpool, their losses this year have come in the Champions League rounds and come to, you know, right now mid-table Napoli. So if you think about it, there's concern there, and Atleti can certainly provide, like I said, that defensive masterclass that would hold off a Liverpool. So you really can't count them out. But at this point, you start to worry about their confidence. On the flip side, Real Madrid feel like they can score against anybody at this point, and you know, you're going to bring on Manchester City, a team that has, you know, conceded plenty of goals on the season, and you've almost got to start liking their chances, don't you think? Where you know, maybe a month ago, even a month ago, you would sit there and go, you know, City's pretty good. City, you know, high flying, great attack, Pep Guardiola, blah, blah, blah. And you would make City the favorites. But right now, you've got to think that this matchup is much more even leading into the Champions League, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was always going to be even heading into that Champions League clash, because obviously the history that Real Madrid had, especially under a coach who had won it multiple times with the same team, knows the players well. It was always going to be a tight game from that standpoint. But I think now, you know, edging across how, you know, City have been faring in the league, you know, haven't been as convincing as one would think at Real Madrid picking up momentum, you know, that advantage is heading into Real Madrid. So it's a case of both Madrid sides kind of getting into either good momentum heading into their Champions League draw and full of confidence, to another Madrid side that really needs to find that before their big clash. Two big clashes, and I think they really need to focus well in the league and find that confidence. Because in the end, you know, the good thing about these type of clashes, you know, it's home and away. So I believe Real Madrid start off first, if I'm not mistaken. I have to check or something along those lines. So I'm just going to double check here.
I believe you're right.
Yeah, they do. Yep. And both teams are actually start at home. So that just makes it much more difficult for them to be able to get a convincing result against those two teams.
Right, I agree. Let's table the discussion and move forward with it after the Madrid derby. I would love to get to our interview. Rob, like I said in our opening monologue, we had the pleasure of interviewing Risto Stoichkov, Bulgarian national team player, Bulgarian national team coach. Currently working for TODN and doing a lot of Liga MX stuff with them, as well as covering other things, Champions League, so on. And just an honor to talk to really one of the world greats in football. He was voted 44th best player in the world of the past century, if I remember correctly. Just an absolute honor. So without further ado, the Risto Stoichkov interview. Risto, welcome to our show. It's an honor to be speaking with you tonight. Risto, bienvenido a nuestro show. Es un honor hablar contigo esta noche.
Muchas gracias. Thank you very much.
My first question relates to your time at Parma, since I personally follow the Serie A closer than any other league. You played for Parma in 95-96 with players like Fabio Cannavaro, Pippo Inzaghi, and a very young Gianluigi Buffon. What was your impression of the Serie A and those young players during your time there? Mi primera pregunta se refiere a su tiempo en Parma, ya que personalmente sigo la Serie A más cerca que cualquier otra liga. Jugaste para Parma en 95-96 con jugadores como Fabio Cannavaro, Pippo Inzaghi y un muy joven Gianluigi Buffon. ¿Cuál fue su impresión de la Serie A y esos jugadores jóvenes durante su tiempo allí?
Primero, primera época fue del Barça, después fue a Parma.
Sí, sí.
Y de verdad que era un gran equipo, un equipo con mucho talento en aquel momento, y Cannavaro, Pippo Inzaghi, Buffon eran los tres jugadores más jóvenes en aquel momento de estar con equipo. Y de verdad que hasta hoy tengo una gran amistad con ellos. Sigo hablando con ellos, y cuando estamos juntos siempre nos pasamos bien. Yo he visto una gran responsabilidad a esos jugadores jóvenes, porque querían ser grandes futbolistas, y luego después su carrera le ha demostrado que fueron unos auténticos cracks.
It was a very good team when I did leave Barcelona to go to Parma. A lot of talent, and those three players in particular were the youngest ones. To this day, you know, I still have a good friendship with them. I keep in contact with them. We try to keep in touch. I saw them with a huge responsibility with them to become good players, which eventually led to the careers that they all had. Risto, I wanted to talk in particular now about Barcelona. You won 13 titles there, which include 5 league titles, the Champions League back in 1992. What are some of your fond memories looking back at that time in Spain and the experience you had playing in that dream team under Johan Cruyff? Risto, yo quería también hablar de su tiempo en Barcelona. Ganaste 13 títulos, ganaste la Liga 5 veces, el Champions League en 92. ¿Cuál fue tu recuerdos ahí en España y especialmente jugando en ese dream team con el técnico Johan Cruyff?
Estoy contento y feliz, y esto de su paso por Barcelona fue muy rápido. Estando un jugador joven en Bulgaria, donde tenemos la oportunidad de jugar partidos de Europa contra Barcelona, equipo de CSKA de Sofía quedó eliminado en semifinal contra Barcelona, pero en estos dos partidos marqué 3 goles, estaba jugando bastante bien, fue máximo goleador en Bulgaria. Y Barcelona se fija de mí, personalmente, Johan Cruyff, donde ha dado orden, sí o sí, Cristo Fresco tiene que fichar por Barcelona.
I'm happy. The time in Barcelona was very fast. When I was a young player in Bulgaria, we played against them in the Champions League, playing for CSKA Sofia. But in those 2 games, I scored 3 goals, playing well. I was the top goal scorer in Bulgaria. And Johan Cruyff, you know, wanted me personally. And this is why I had the career that I was able to have. Gisto, hablando de eso, eso te ayudó. Gisto, this helped you a lot moving into your later life. I want to talk about probably the best, if not one of the greatest individual careers that you had, moments that you had. You won the Ballon d'Or in 1994, being the first and only Bulgarian to win the award. How much pride does that give you looking on more than 2 decades later? Quería hablar sobre probablemente tu mejor elogio individualmente, que ganaste el Ballon d'Or en 1994, estando en Barcelona, y siendo hoy en día todavía el primer y único búlgaro a ganar ese premio. Viendo eso después de casi 25 años después, ¿cuánto orgullo te da eso a ganar ese Balón de Oro?
Mira, Balón de Oro no es de Cristo Stoichkov. Balón de Oro es de mi familia, de mis padres, mi mujer, mis hijos, los jugadores, entrenadores, los públicos. O sea, yo nunca me repongo que Cristo Stoichkov ganó Balón de Oro. No. Individualmente sí, pero sin ellos es imposible. Es imposible. En la vida no hay nadie que puede hacer algo solo. Siempre hay alguien detrás. Por eso digo que el Balón de Oro es parte de mucha gente. Por eso estoy orgulloso que soy el único búlgaro y quizás lo último que va a hacer. Pero también es la realidad. Cómo es, pasó el tiempo, con mucha disciplina, mucho sacrificio, mucho trabajo para entender qué es fútbol. Y por eso que este trofeo siempre está, digamos, en mi casa para, a veces, cuando le veo, no le toco, más que mis hijos, mis nietas, si juegan con ellas, porque son parte de ese trofeo.
Personally, this Ballon d'Or was not just because of Hristo Stoichkov. It was because of the support from my family, my friends, my teammates, the fans, everyone else that helped me. Looking into that, because I was probably the first and maybe the only Bulgarian to win it, it was the case of having that kind of support, because winning the Ballon d'Or is not because of one person, and it's not because that's impossible. It was because of the support and because of looking back at how my my daughters, my grandkids as well, are looking at it as well. They view it as something very, very important and something that I feel most proud of personally. Y finally,
sí, este año, digamos, haciendo un tour en Europa. Mm-hmm. También se ha hecho un tour en Chicago, se ha hecho en Inglaterra, en Londres, en Toronto, en Varsovia, porque sacamos ahora un libro muy, muy importante de mi carrera, digamos, un libro muy interesante. Y obviamente después de 25 años con Balón de Oro siempre es importante a la gente que pueda sacarse una foto con Balón de Oro. Y de verdad que las ciudades donde pasamos con la gente y sobre todo los niños, porque es un sueño. Yo en mi vida siempre ha soñado de hacer cosas como futbolista, como persona, y siempre manteniéndome con esto. Muchas cosas se han conseguido. Algunas que no, porque no te permitían quizás hacer campeón del mundo, no me permitían hacer campeón de Europa, pero etcétera, son cosas de fútbol. Pero orgulloso de todo eso que se ha hecho en mi vida
como futbolista.
I'm very proud of having to win that Ballon d'Or. Currently, we're doing a tour of that across Europe and in other places as well, promoting a book on my career. And looking at that, it really provides that kind of, you know, things with sacrifice and hard work that perhaps things where I couldn't win, such as the World Cup and whatnot, wouldn't allow me to do it. But the sacrifice that helped me and determination to get that Ballon d'Or gives me a lot of pride in the end. Histo, finalmente, quería preguntar, finally, I want to ask you about that great era of players that you played against in the 80s and the 90s. What are some of the greatest players that you played with and against during your time as a player?
Quería hablar sobre esa gran era que jugaste en los años 80 y los años 90. Y hablando tan simple también, ¿cuál fue uno de los mejores jugadores que jugaste de socio en el campo y concha durante tu tiempo como jugador?
Mira, para mí, esta pregunta es muy difícil. ¿Por qué? Porque tengo respeto a todos los jugadores. Cuando yo comencé de niño, hasta el último día que terminé de jugar acá en Estados Unidos, tanto en Chicago Fire, tanto en DC United. Primero, porque sin ellos, porque el portero tiene que parar, porque la defensa tiene que parar, el mediocampista tiene que jugar, y los delanteros tenemos que marcar goles para que ganamos y vamos uh-huh. bien. Por eso, con todo el que han jugado, con todo tengo un gran respeto, porque, repito, sin ellos es imposible que se puede conseguir títulos, tanto como club, tanto como individualmente.
Yeah, I have a respect for all the players that I had. It's from the beginning of my career as a kid in Bulgaria to ending in MLS at the Chicago Fire. I have a respect for all the players. So it's very difficult to pinpoint the exact players that I played with and played against because all of them have their functions. A goalkeeper has to stop shots. A defender has to defend. A midfielder has to work in midfield, and a forward has to score goals. For me, it's that's the thing that I have the most respect for, and I can't pinpoint that personally.
Risto, dos preguntas más para mí. Two more questions from me. In the 1994 World Cup, you led Bulgaria to its best performance ever, earning the Golden Boot and the Bronze Ball. This World Cup run was highlighted by a 2-1 victory over defending champions Germany in the quarterfinals. Tell us about your time in the tournament and your most memorable moment. En la Mundial de 94, llevaste a Bulgaria a su mejor actuación, ganado la bota de oro y la bola de bronce. Esta carrera de la Copa del Mundo se destacó por una victoria de 2-1 sobre los campeones defensores Alemania en los cuartos de final. Cuéntanos sobre tu tiempo en el torneo y tu momento más memorable.
Primero, fuimos equipo que luchamos muchos años de estar en una fiesta grande. En este equipo, de verdad que comenzó en año 82-83. En estos jugadores que estamos en 94, ¿no? Muchos de nosotros comenzamos de jugar a todas las selecciones de Bulgaria. Sub-14, sub-15, sub-18, sub-20, equipo olímpico. Yo debuté más joven de todos para el primer equipo de selección de Bulgaria absoluta, en el año 86. Pero claro, no pudimos conseguir, digamos, en ese grupo en el año 88. Perdimos en casa un partido que me bastaba siempre 0-0. Perdimos. En 90, para el campeonato de Italia no podemos. Fuimos eliminados. En 92... también fuimos eliminados para Eurocopa en Suecia. Y llega el último partido que era para nosotros la vida y la muerte, ¿no? Contra Francia, en 93, donde tuvimos que ganar y ir en este Mundial de 94. Y a partir de ahí, nuestro sueño, y mi sueño particular era de ganar un partido en este Mundial, porque nunca Bulgaria ha ganado un partido a una mundial, siempre empates o derrotas. Entonces, la primera derrota, cuando fuimos contra Nigeria por 3-0, digo, caray, ¿qué vamos a hacer? pero nos tocó segundo partido contra Grecia, que le ganamos 4-0, y a partir de ahí todo era fácil para nosotros, partido por partido. Y luego este partido contra Alemania, donde nosotros como equipo sabemos la dificultad que puede tener equipo alemán. Acaba de ganar el último mundial en Italia. Y entonces nuestro equipo tenía 4 o 5 jugadores que jugaban en Alemania: Lechkov, Balakov, Tsvetanov, en lateral, después Burimirov, otro chico más joven. Entonces me explicaban que tantos alemanes que son muy fuertes de nombre, pero futbolísticamente Bulgaria es mejor. Y yo le creí porque sabía que nuestro equipo es mejor. Y fui así en este partido, ganando 2-1 y más feliz del mundo, porque el mismo partido tenía un gran día, que mi hija tenía cumpleaños, y me llamaba antes del partido y dice: papá, marca un gol por mi cumpleaños, por favor, tal, tal. Digo: mira, el gol no es fácil, pero voy a intentar. Y se dio en esta falta en minuto 76, donde empaté en partido 1-1, y luego ya 3 minutos después Lechko metió el segundo gol que ganamos en Alemania. Un gran día, un día donde no se puede, digamos, a vivirlo. Tienes que estar ahí en el campo, ¿no? No puedo explicarle a la gente en nuestra alegría cómo era.
We fought very hard to make that World Cup in 94. And to be honest, that team started all the way back in 1982, 1983. The players that had went to the 1994 World Cup, a lot of us played for all the U teams at all the levels, U14, U15, U17, U20, Olympics. I was the youngest ever player to play for the Bulgarian national team in 1986. We couldn't do well to make it to Seoul 88, to the World Cup in 90. Euro 92, we lost, we got eliminated. And then heading into qualifying for 1994, we had that last game to qualify against France, which was kind of a must win, where we did win and we eliminated France and we ended up qualifying. From there, my dream heading into the World Cup was to win a game, because Bulgaria had never won a World Cup game before. It was always a draw or a loss. When we played against Nigeria in that first game, we lost 3-0. We were thinking to ourselves, what's going to happen? But we put ourselves focused, and we ended up beating Greece. And the team was more united. We got confidence. And then we had that game against Germany. The team knew how difficult it would be playing against Germany, because they were the last world champions. And we knew that challenge. But in our team, we had 4 or 5 players that played in Germany. And I always thought to myself that, you know, that team, that our team was better, you know, as a collective team. And in the end, you know, it happened. We won 2-1. And for me, it was a special day as well, because it was the birthday of my daughter, who had asked me, you know, Daddy, can you please score a goal for me? And I said, you know, I will try my best. It will be difficult, but I will try my best. And it happened, thankfully, and it was a great day. And it's something that you can't really picture and you can't really talk about. You know, you have to be in the moment to feel it. And that's why I think it was so special being in that World Cup.
Oh, what a great story. My última pregunta, my last question. Describe your transition from coaching to television. Do you miss coaching or do you enjoy broadcasting more? Describa su transición del coaching a la televisión. ¿Extrañas el coaching o te gusta estar en la televisión más?
A ver, yo tengo diploma de entrenador y estuve entrenador muchos años. Estaba en selección de Bulgaria, en Barcelona, en España, en South Africa. De verdad que me tocó cosas de vivir extradeportivas que no me gustó y por eso le dejé un momento. Y de verdad que hoy ya tengo una oportunidad de ser entrenador, seguramente le voy a ser. Pero en este momento estoy a 100% dedicado a mi trabajo aquí en TUDN, porque tenemos un gran proyecto con nuestro jefe Juan Carlos Rodríguez y Oleg, que son dos fenómenos acá en nuestra televisión. Pero también me da mucha alegría de poder trabajar con gente espectacular, sobre todo con Tapia, con Diego Balado, con Enrique Bermúdez, José Luis Salido, Félix Fernández, que fue mundialista en 94 con México, Enrique Borja, mejor jugador quizás en la época de México. Y por eso te digo que estoy contento y feliz con mi trabajo que estoy haciendo acá. Y estoy disfrutando. Y es agradecer que Univision y sobre todo TUDN con la plataforma me ha dado esta gran oportunidad de hacer las cosas que a mí me gusta. Hacer entrevistas, hacer documentales. Viajo mucho por Europa. Estamos haciendo un trabajo muy digno para esta gran cadena. Y de verdad, para luchar contra otras cadenas, hoy para nosotros es un sueño. Un sueño hecho realidad. Compitiendo con los grandes, grandes televisiones, pero también hoy ya somos reconocidos. El año pasado ganamos el trofeo más importante en Globo de Oro para nuestra cadena, y para mí esto es más importante. Por eso estoy feliz y contento. Y si sale algo de entrenador, sí. Si no, aquí estoy con un equipo de grandes profesionales, de grandes amigos, que es muy importante de tener amigos. Porque mis amigos yo no les compro. Yo les demuestro que Hristo Stoichkov no compra amigos. Le demuestra que soy.
I have coaching badges. You know, I coached in Barcelona and South Africa and Bulgaria. I had found out that back then maybe those extra sporting activities perhaps were not as good as I thought it would be. I was not focused on that. But I'm very happy at where I am right now. If the opportunity comes where I can be a coach, then by all means. But right now I'm 100% dedicated here at TUDN because, you know, we have a good project, you know, led by the Juan Carlos Rodriguez and many other people that I enjoy working with, Luis Omar Tapia, Diego Velado, Felix Fernandez, Enrique Borja, all those pundits as well. And I'm happy and I'm enjoying everything that we're doing, you know, doing interviews, doing documentaries, traveling across Europe. You know, we're really doing a great job here to try and compete and to be with all the other TV channels here and be noticed. You know, we're happy that we won the prize, the Globo de Oro, because that for me, that's special. And I feel as if though, being in this type of company has allowed me to make a lot of good friends, because if there's one thing that Hristo Stoichkov knows is that, you know, I don't, that friends are not bought, they are made. And I demonstrate myself the type of friend that I am with them, with all these amazing people.
Hristo, it was an absolute honor and a pleasure to be speaking with you tonight. All the best with your work in the future at TUDN, and we hope to have you back sometime soon. Hristo, fue un honor absoluto y un placer hablar contigo esta noche. Todo lo mejor con su trabajo en el futuro en TUDN, y esperamos tenerlo de regreso pronto.
Muchas gracias, y de verdad que es un gran placer también para mandar toda la gente de vuestro trabajo, de nuestro trabajo, porque también es importante que gente sepan la actualidad de deporte, no solo de fútbol, de baloncesto, de balonmano, de fútbol americano, de hockey. Y de verdad que hoy en estos días estoy pasando bastante mal por esta gran pérdida de este gran ídolo, de este gran personaje de Kobe Bryant, que descansa en paz. Mm-hmm. Y la hija pequeña, pero eso es la vida, hay que luchar, hay que soportar, de verdad, una gran pérdida de nuestro deporte, porque nosotros somos deportistas y amamos baloncesto. Yo crecí con aquella época de Michael Jordan, de Scottie Pippen, después con Magic Johnson, me recuerdo, porque nosotros jugamos en el 94 Mundial, y yo, si estaban jugando baloncesto, digo, a ver, ¿qué voy a ver? ¿Campeonato del mundo de fútbol o baloncesto? Muchas veces, estas tardes me había visto baloncesto. Entonces, de verdad que es una gran pérdida, sobre todo de honestidad, de este chico tan amable que descansa en paz.
He's saying thank you very much. It's a pleasure for us to be able to speak about the great work that we do, not just in soccer, football, but in all sports, in basketball, football, American football, hockey, and also rest in peace to a great athlete and a phenomenal person in Kobe Bryant, to him and his daughter. May he rest in peace. And, you know, in life, you have to go through this and be strong more than anything. The memories that he have is that, you know, we grew up watching the NBA with the likes of Scottie Pippen, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and many other players. You know, it was a case of either, you know, watching the World Cup or watching in the NBA during my times as a player. And I always wanted to watch basketball. But may he rest in peace, and may we
remember him as the great athlete and great person that he was.
And thanks again to Risto Stoichkov from TUDN to, you know, the honor of being able to interview him, and we hope to have him back sometime in the very near future. Rob, let's jump into our topics that we're going to discuss tonight. And the first one, you know, like we said, we did the Roma Derby. We've now finished the Madrid Derby. Let's jump into the Milan Derby, okay, because that's coming up on this weekend. I believe it's one of our matches of the week on Sunday. With the news that broke today that Samir Handanovic might actually miss the match with a broken finger. I don't know if you'd seen this. This just came out within the past few hours. He has a fracture in his left hand, and he's likely to miss the match against AC Milan. He's been arguably the best goalkeeper in the Serie A and probably one of the top five goalkeepers in the world at the moment. And one of the main reasons why Inter have really stayed, kept pace with Juventus in this run to the Serie A title. It's a massive miss for them. You look at AC Milan, they missed Zlatan Ibrahimovic on the weekend. It showed in, I believe, a 1-1 draw. And now they're going to, you know, hopefully they're going to get him back. He was out with the flu. This matchup, Rob, with the teams going in not necessarily in different directions. Obviously, it's, you know, Inter have been running, you know, pretty well. They've unbeaten in their last five in league, but AC Milan is also unbeaten in their last five in the league as well, and have marched their way up to eighth and actually tied for sixth if you look at goal differential. So this is going to be a much more intriguing matchup, given the resurgence of AC Milan, especially since the return of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And now with the loss of Handanovic, this could be something that's a little closer and might be the proverbial banana skin for Inter Milan in terms of keeping pace with Juve. What are your thoughts going into this particular matchup?
Well, I think, obviously, you know, a derby is always special. It doesn't matter what position that the teams are in the league. You know, Milan obviously are still fighting, I guess. I guess both teams are fighting in the case of different scenarios. You know, Inter are still fighting for that Scudetto. You know, having two teams in their way with Juventus and Lazio, while there's Milan, you know, are really fighting for that last spot that's headed by, I think, Cagliari at the moment in sixth place. So it really is going to be an interesting battle, because I think if a banana slip is going to happen for Inter, it's not going to be against Juventus or Lazio, as you would expect, but you know it's going to be in these type of matches, the derby matches. I think Milan obviously needs some sort of, I guess you would say, something to cheer for, something to feel happy for, have that confidence boost. And what better way to do that than to ruin your basically your rival's chance of winning the Scudetto? Because personally, I would think that. I think who Juventus play Hellas? No, they play Hellas.
They play Hellas. Saturday.
They have play Hellas. That's what I thought. Yeah. Okay, so you would expect that Hellas, you know, I think they're what, ninth place, so they're behind Milan. If you expect Juve to win that game, and you know, heading into that Sunday game, if Inter can't pick up maximum points, I think they might be out of the title race. To be fair, yeah. They can't afford to slip up again. You know, they have to really find the results and do so, because then on the 16th, after that game, they got a big game against Lazio. Mm-hmm. And I think that game, whoever wins that one, I think is going to challenge Juve for the title. I think if we do see a loser there, then they're out of that title race. And then the winner of that will just have to push it on for against Juventus for that Scudetto. So really, there's a lot to play for. I think Milan need that confidence boost for them to, you know, obviously ruin Milan, Inter's title chances, and also continue their run into the top six, whereas Inter need to win this game because they realize that, you know, one slip up, or at least one more slip up for the remaining of the season, and you could really see their Scudetto hopes really, really damper. And you look at the side that it has, you know, obviously they have a disadvantage of not having Handanovic perhaps for that game, but looking at the attacking side, Lukaku, Lautaro Martinez, you know, they just got Christian Eriksen, you know, all those players. They really have a team that could be able to win the Scudetto, but they cannot afford to slip up in these type of games before they take on your Lazios and your Juves in the future.
Sure. And, you know, just as a side note, like you said, with Milan really trying to push into those European spots, after this, they welcome in Torino, Torino who just fired Walter Mazzarri as their head coach. So, and then you go from there, you run into the next match, which will be Fiorentina on the road. That's not going to be an easy out. So this is a set of matches for AC Milan with the biggest test right up front with Inter that will kind of dictate whether they
they are capable of stepping into that European spot or not. And it's amazing, though, to see this team, the turnaround under Zlatan Ibrahimovic as he comes in, and at the same time, how much they missed him on the weekend against Hellas Verona, which was something to see. You also, with Zlatan on the pitch, you've seen better play out of Rafael Leao, who they've been expecting more out of. They felt so confident with it. They sent off Christoph Piontek to Hertha Berlin, if you look at that in this transfer window. So there's a lot of moving parts here with AC Milan, and I think that they're resting a lot of stuff on Zlatan Ibrahimovic, but I think he's a person that shoulders a lot. You know, you look at the attacking of Lautaro Martinez and Romelu Lukaku. I think, don't quote me on this, but I want to say Lautaro misses this next match because of the red card that he picked up in the last match. So there's, you know, this is a good time for AC Milan, if you have as healthy Zlatan, that they can possibly pick up, and really, let's be honest, Rob, if they pick up a draw in this match, it's a win for AC Milan. It's a much bigger win for AC Milan than it would be for Inter, because Inter need 3 points. They need maximum points. Lazio keeps winning. Juve keeps winning. They need to keep winning if they want to stay in this race. And this is, like we said, a proverbial banana skin. Going to be interesting to see how an incredibly good defensive Inter Milan handle, you know, Leao and Zlatan and Ante Rebic at this point, who's also been playing much better. And it's interesting to see if they do indeed miss Lautaro Martinez from this matchup, what Inter Milan goes with up top to complement Lukaku, to see if it's Alexis Sanchez or how they handle that and moving forward in the match as well, a match that sees Inter as the home side as this as well. So interesting to see. Again, 2:45 on Sunday. We'll list that in our matches of the week coming up in just a little bit. Let's go over to Ligue 1, Rob, because we haven't had a chance to talk about Ligue 1 in a while. And we had a little bit of drama this weekend in Ligue 1, if you think about it. The first one, I mean, which one do you want to tackle first? Do you want to tackle Kylian Mbappe, or do you want to tackle Neymar? Because both of them were pretty interesting happenings on the weekend, you know, and they're kind of all interesting in their own little worlds. I talked about Neymar in the opening monologue, where he's going to miss the next couple weeks with another injury, an injury he actually booked or he picked up in this matchup. You know, many would want to say it was from his partying after his birthday party, but I don't think it was that necessarily. I think it was being tripped in this Montpellier match. But where do you want to go first? Let's go with Neymar, because
pink hair always goes first.
Yeah, pink hair, I guess, always does go first, if you've seen that picture. So Neymar, somewhere in the second half of this match, does a rainbow with the ball in the corner. A little bit of showboating, the ball goes out of bounds. And the referee gives him a little stick for it, where they have like this trade back and forth, you know, this verbal exchange between the two of them, where the referee basically accused Neymar of showboating. I want to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say he actually carded him for the dissent afterwards. But then it carried over into the locker room and into the hallway going into the locker room, where Neymar continued to give it to the referee. The referee told him to speak French or something like that.
Or be patient. It's conflicted. It's either that or be patient before telling him, or just before telling him off. I can't say it because of censors, but before telling him off. Right. No, he didn't get carded. I believe he didn't get carded in that game. He did get carded.
He did get carded, yes.
He did get carded, yeah.
Yeah. And
I think it was because of that, actually.
Yeah, in fact, the quote is... Neymar says, "I play football and this man gives me a yellow card."
Yeah, that was it.
Speak French. And Neymar says, "Speak French, my blank." So, you know, is this the kind of thing? It's the little stuff, right? It's the multiple injuries. You know, these nagging little injuries that Neymar seems to be picking up left and right. A little bit of a lack of focus in general, I would say, Rob. You know, not entirely, you know, pinpointing one thing here or there, but and I don't think the rainbow, I think the rainbow was maybe a little bit of showboating, but at the same time, you know, a Brazilian would call it jogo bonito, right? So whatever.
Ronaldinho would always do it.
Either way, doesn't matter. He did it, you know, no harm, no foul. But I think between this and maybe the treatment by this French referee, and maybe the treatment by the French media, maybe finally is the final push for Neymar to say, you know what, I want out. I don't care what the price is. Just get me out of here. Do you think that this is the kind of thing that could be another straw on the camel's back that could finally, you know, move that needle and maybe move him to Barcelona?
You know, as we speak, Joe, Neymar turns 28 on Wednesday.
Right.
And, you know, you think 28-year-olds are supposed to be in the prime of their careers and enjoy themselves and win titles and whatnot. Now, Neymar obviously is winning titles over there in PSG, but not the important ones, which we all know is the Champions League. Mm-hmm. But I actually do want to recall back to a quote. I think it was during the Olympics where a Brazilian journalist, this was before the Olympics on home soil that they eventually did win the gold medal, the first gold medal ever in the nation's history for soccer. And I recall an interview. One of them was asking, you know, about your attitude, about your personality. And he called out and he said, you know, I'm responsible for what I need to do. You know, I know that, you know, if I want to go out and I want to go have fun and whatnot, I understand that, you know, I can go to training the next day and I will be there. You know, and we haven't seen, and to be fair, we haven't heard stories of Neymar missing training or anything, right? Not right. that I can recall.
Not that I can recall either.
Right. So we see a professional in that standpoint. But you also start to worry about what kind of maturity he has. I mean, obviously, I don't know Neymar. We don't know what he is. Obviously, we can't go in the mind of him and see how he's really thinking at this moment. But I just feel as if there was that pressure, you know, to come in, you know, the most expensive player of all time, you know, hoping to give PSG the crown jewel that they've been waiting for ever since this project started with the Qataris, was to win the Champions League. And, you know, they failed twice, obviously, because Neymar also wasn't playing, which is no harm to him. It was just bad luck in that sense. But, you know, there's only so much patience the PSG fans and I think the hierarchy can have, you know, because when you're essentially bought here to win the Champions League and you fail to do so, When you're doing performances like this, it's not a good look. I mean, obviously he's entitled to do what he wants. He's a player. He's here to entertain, as we, you know, as we talked at the beginning of the show, to entertain and to be the best that they can on the pitch. But at the same time, you know, you need to have that maturity and be well aware. I mean, I don't think a 28-year-old is bound to be 28-year-old is going to tell off a referee and use explicits because of showboating. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous. I mean, and obviously we'll get to the other player in a bit when it comes to attitude, because this heading into a game, and it's funny we say this now, Joe, because, you know, obviously PSG are dominating in the league and whatnot, but when you're looking at what's going on and off the pitch and how their opponent is playing right now, the form that they're in, this might, and to be fair, when this tie was announced, many people put PSG as the favorites. I mean, they weren't big favorites, but they were firm favorites if you had to pick one gun to your head or something.
Sure.
But now, looking at the form that both the teams are having, especially Dortmund, who are playing ridiculously well, they would say, still in the Bundesliga race, this is going to even the playing field. And, you know, for PSG, that's the worst thing that could happen.
I completely agree with you, and you know it's going to reflect. Let's say PSG do get knocked out right at this point in the Champions League, and I'm glad you went down this road because this is kind of where I was thinking too. Let's say they get knocked out and Neymar is out injured, right? Because they're talking about missing a couple of weeks. That's going to put us right on the cusp.
Well, what is it again? Was it a rib?
Intercostal rib injury.
You're the doctor. What do you think?
It could be. Rib injuries are difficult to manage. They're difficult to handle because, you know, there's a lot, you know, just the act of breathing, Rob, can irritate that injury, right? You know, you think about it. As you breathe, your lungs expand, your rib cage expands. So just the act of breathing, and everyone takes between, you know, 12 and 18 respirations a minute. So for, you know, 15 times a minute every day of his life, every minute of his life, he's expanding those ribs, causing irritation. So I'm sure it's not the most comfortable of things going on for him, right? But if they say it's 2 weeks, I'm gonna guess it's a reasonably simple injury. It's probably an injury that can also be managed with pain medication. You know, we see this happen in the NFL all the time. Guys run out there with broken ribs and still play. I don't think that the injury is that severe, so I think they could manage this and have him ready for that first Champions League match. But having said that, having, like you said, the Dortmund form right now, which is ridiculous, right? They are playing as good as any team right now in world football, period, end of story. Yes, including Liverpool,
Okay.
I was about to say. I was like, maybe they have to say something about that.
Well, they might, but so would Bayern Munich, right?
Yeah.
I think right now
Real Madrid too.
So I think in this form of, let's say, since Dortmund brought Haaland in, right? This is probably the best we've seen them play in quite some time. And it really harks back to that old, the same Dortmund team that went to the Champions League final under Jurgen Klopp. That's the way they are playing right now. And they're doing it with youth. They're doing it with speed. They're doing it as if Jurgen Klopp himself was on that bench. So now you bring that against PSG. You bring all the weight of the project, right, that Neymar is a part of. You bring the harassment from... we'll call it harassment from this referee. You know, I'm sure there are two sides to the coin. You bring the constant injuries, you bring all of that stuff. And then all of a sudden Dortmund, you know, upends PSG and moves on here. I've got to think he's out. I've got to think he's done. I've got to think the owners at PSG will be as quick to sell him as he will be to pack his stuff to leave. Mm-hmm. Cause I think at that point, the writing's on the wall that he is not the piece for the project.
And if it's not him, what happens to the other piece that we're going to talk about?
Well, I think that becomes another interesting moving part. And let's talk about it now. Let's bring him up. Because mm-hmm. Kylian Mbappe this weekend kind of had a verbal exchange with Thomas Tuchel as he came off the pitch. And I want to point out, Rob, because I'm looking at the box score of this matchup. He comes off the pitch at 5-0.
Yep, that's okay. What I'm about to say.
This is not
actually
something...
I want your thoughts on this first. Okay. How would you fare on it? But continue.
Okay, so he comes off the pitch at 5-0. Tuchel takes him off in a double change with him and Pablo Sarabia, who I believe also scored in the match. He did, and brings on Mauro Icardi and Edison Cavani. Cavani's a guy, really, you know. You think about this, Rob. He's been the lone man out. We haven't really heard much out of Cavani's mouth, and we went through a transfer window. He hasn't really seen the pitch. This is a guy that is certainly capable of starting as a striker on any team in the world.
And he's about to leave soon.
Exactly. So Mbappe comes off, has words with Thomas Tuchel, you know, and not for nothing, you know, I saw a little bit of it, comes off like a pouty child to me, Rob.
Mm.
Okay. That's the way I saw it. And, you know, you're coming off the pitch in a 5-0 match where you know you're going to be the starting striker coming up against Borussia Dortmund in 2 weeks, and you know you're going to have to score goals, period, okay? You're going to have to score goals. Ligue 1 also has matches midweek, so we're going to need you for that. I mean, this was, if I'm Thomas Tuchel, I make this change 100 times out of 100 opportunities, period. I don't want Mbappe getting hurt. The game was physical against Montpellier. Mm-hmm. We're already up 5-0. We have midweek matches. You've got to come off the pitch, my friend. Period. We have to protect you. We have to make sure you're healthy, you're fit, you're ready to face, you know, Borussia Dortmund. You're ready to face Lyon next weekend, right? Which is another big matchup. These are all points that need to be made, and he comes off like a pouty child. So now you start to wonder, in terms of Thomas Tuchel, you know, is he losing the locker room? There's always that talk that will crop up anytime you have a superstar pouting on the sidelines, right? So you worry about that. You start to worry about, you know, Mbappe's mental health. You know, does he not see the big picture? Is he only in this for himself?
Maybe the influence of Neymar is getting to him. Because they always seem to be hanging out with each other, if I'm not mistaken.
That is another great question. That is a great question, too, because if you have a bad influence, what do you do with that? So, you know, these are questions that I think have to be answered by Kylian Mbappe. They have to be answered by Thomas Tuchel. They have to be answered by the PSG front office. And you start to wonder, you know, these are the two biggest pieces PSG owns right now. Cavani's going to be gone. I don't know that they could survive Cavani, Neymar, Mbappe gone, right? And right now, if my understanding is correct, Mauro Icardi's there on loan. I mean, yep. Obviously, they're going to probably make that permanent. I don't think he has a home in Inter anymore. So
especially the form that Lukaku and Lautaro have, exactly.
Agreed. So I think from that standpoint, you know, you know you've got Icardi, but you can't, if you're PSG, Icardi and Sarabia are not going to be the way to go, right? So you can't afford to lose all of these pieces. And so now you have to look at Mbappe, because let's be honest, 28-year-old Neymar, you can let go, right? You can get a good price, you can let go. You don't want to let go of 21-year-old Kylian Mbappe.
And who hasn't signed a new contract yet. mind you,
which is scary. So you've got to start looking at what are we going to do here? Are we going to keep Mbappe? Are we going to keep Neymar? You can't let any of these guys go on a free. That's insanity, right? You're throwing hundreds of millions of euros out the window if you do that. So I think these questions need to be answered. And I think, you start to ask yourself, is Thomas Tuchel the right guy for the job? Personally, Rob, I think he is.
I think he is too.
Oh yeah, I think he's the right guy for this job, given the players that he has. I think he's got the right crop for what he likes to do. So the answer for me is not Tuchel, but you know how it is. You and I have said it on the show a million times. What have you done for me lately? If Tuchel doesn't get them forward, whether it be a pouty Mbappe or an injured Neymar that is not interested, it's going to fall on Tuchel's head, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely will. Yeah. But I think in this case, I think there are going to be players that are going to be thrown under the bus as well. And in that case, they're going to force a move. I mean, we all know the Mbappe rumors with Real Madrid and that heating up. You know, Neymar, whatever can happen to him. Shit. I mean, we don't know what could happen to him. But, this is really not – if you're Borussia Dortmund, I mean, obviously, I'm sure they're going to view this game as difficult as they want. But probably secretly, they're looking at the chaos that's going on in PSG. And they're thinking to ourselves, you know, they're viewing themselves as underdogs, with all respect. But they could see themselves as favorites if something at PSG isn't turned around and they need to look good heading into that first game against Dortmund in a couple weeks.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
Given the two-legged system we have, let's say they are eliminated by Dortmund. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be the catalyst that we see mass changes at PSG, whether it be Neymar, Mbappe, Tuchel, all of them? Is it at the time where we see mass changes at PSG?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think so too.
You know, yeah, I mean, what is it now? It would be the third straight elimination under Neymar. So three strikes, you're out. Yeah. I think that's how I see it. This project will continue to be a failure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could dominate the entire league as you want, but if you don't get that crown jewel, where you obviously have the resources and the money to do so, but you're failing to do so three rounds before the final.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's inexcusable, I think. Yeah, it's which why this tie is going to be so much fun to watch, just for the drama and everything. It's going to be so much fun to watch.
There's so many levels on this tie. Of course. It's going to be amazing. So,
on and off the pitch, I would say.
But certainly uncertain waters. I do believe you and I are efforting Jonathan Johnson for the preview for this, you know, for Champions League. Yep. And I think there's nobody better to speak to than that, especially given the turmoil and the different angles that we've talked about tonight. So I can't wait to get Jonathan in here and discuss that for sure. So let's table the discussion. Let's give the listeners some matches of the week to follow up on this week, especially with midweek ties in Ligue 1, like we had mentioned before.
Yeah, absolutely. So heading into our matches of the week, we'll start off tomorrow. We have Rennes against Lille at 1 p.m. Heading off all the way to the weekend, we have Everton taking on Crystal Palace at 7:30 to start your Saturday morning. In La Liga, we have two teams that are really looking well in momentum. As we talked about, you know, with Atletico Madrid not really looking as the team that they should be, you have two teams that are really able to pressure them into those European spots. Getafe against Valencia at 10 a.m., on Sunday, we have a really great match, and obviously I think we'll we have three great matches from three different leagues. I think we'll go in order of most tasty to least tasty to most tasty. I think we'll start with PSG Lyon. I mean, obviously we started with them just a few minutes ago. You know, it's an important game. I think if PSG are able to get the result that they need and get that confidence boost, hoping to forget about what happened over the weekend against Montpellier, they definitely have that opportunity. Obviously, we have the Milan Derby at 2:45 p.m. at Serie A and the discussion that we already had with them. But to start off your lunch on this Sunday, Bayern Munich against Leipzig in the Bundesliga, that is going to be a really tasty matchup because of how both the teams fared out. You know, Bayern beat Mainz convincingly. Leipzig came back two goals down against Gladbach that now are looking really into a clash that could decide this entire league. I mean, Bayern are what I think they're still top with 42 points, Leipzig with 41, and then looking at how Dortmund and Gladbach fare, you know, this these top four, the four that we have right now in order, Munich, Leipzig, Dortmund, Mönchengladbach, that can all be switched around come this Sunday. So that's going to be a really great game to watch for, and I can't wait for it. I think, yeah. You know what's sad though, Joe? I think it's going to be on Fox Sports 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I'm not. For me, unfortunately,
I mean, I have it anyways.
I'm going to be working, so this is my weekend to travel, so it's. Yeah, I'm going to try to sneak in a few minutes of the match if I can. It's going to be tough, but I might be watching it like on delay or something, have to go back and watch it after. Just to follow up on what you said, Gladbach host FC Cologne on Sunday. And just looking, Dortmund actually traveled to Leverkusen, fifth place Leverkusen.
Well, let's ask this now. Yeah. Might as well. Can I ask? Sure. Does Haaland score?
Yes.
Yeah. How many?
You've got to say yes until he doesn't, right? I mean, two. I mean, because he's scoring
two
them.
Goals.
Yeah, he's going to get two goals against Leverkusen. Dortmund win 4-1.
That would put him at what? He has how many
nine.
Goals?
Nine. That'll put him at nine. He's got
nine
seven,
goals
seven
in
three matches.
In four games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Unreal.
Insanity. I guess the kid's not afraid of the spotlight.
Well, he started. And by the way, I guess that killed our discussion. Hey, if he's ready, go ahead. Put him on the pitch.
And that kind of hinted to the fact that he would either get in now or he wouldn't get in as a starter till after.
Yeah.
You know,
so now I think that spot's going to be there until whenever, I guess.
sorry, Torgan Hazard, but definitely. So let's go back to the trivia question. Why don't you give it to the listeners again, and I'll give you a number.
Yep, absolutely. So this weekend, Aston Villa's Mbawana Samata from the country of Tanzania became the latest nationality to score in the Premier League. How many different countries? How many different countries have we seen a goal in the Premier League?
I'm going to throw a stupid number at you, and I'm going to say something like 39.
You got one digit, but you're not right.
I've got one digit right, one digit wrong?
Yes.
Is it the three or the nine?
The nine.
Nah, of course it is. It's got to be more countries then. I'm going to go to 49 then.
Nope.
Really? Wow. Am I over or under?
Under.
Wow. 69?
Under.
Still 89?
Under.
109.
Over.
Oh, so
99. There have been players from 99 different countries who have scored goals in the Premier League. Tanzania was number 99.
That is an amazing number. That's a great stat. That is a great, great stat.
I wonder if it was going to be 100.
I don't know. That's a great question, too. I guess we'd have to look at what countries have not scored and then follow through from there.
Yeah.
So, all right, my friend, without anything left on the docket, let's do the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right, let's get it rolling here. So, for episode 271 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to Risto Stoichkov for joining us and giving us an amazing interview. Keep an eye on our Twitter feed for next week. We're not sure if we'll be able to get a show together to give you or not, so keep an eye on our Twitter feed and you'll know it there. So, for episode 271 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.